You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio from South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio, 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, August 2nd, 2017.
So we started exploring different ways to deliver those goods. In the midst of all that, there was a largest HIV outbreak in the history of the country about an hour south of us in Scott County.
WFHB News Director Wes Martin speaks with Indiana Recovery Alliance Director Chris Abert about the current state of addiction services here in Monroe County.
Also coming up in the next half hour, hackers are everywhere on our edition of our Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
White-tailed deer at the Griffey Lake Nature Preserve north of Bloomington are close to destroying the preserve to the point that it may never recover. Last night in a Bloomington Parks and Recreation Department public information panel, three natural resource experts from the city and state presented evidence that deer are taking down the forest understory faster than it can regenerate. Steve Cotter, the Natural Resources Manager with Bloomington Parks and Recreation, said the potential devastation and loss of genetic diversity was identified in the Griffey Lake Master Plan back in 2008. Cotter described an entire ecosystem of plant, animal, and tree species that he says is at risk.
7 small mammal species, 11 medium to large mammal species, and they found 3 different bat species. There have been over 160 species of birds seen at Griffey Lake Nature Preserve, including many that rely on the property for nesting. Those include 20 species of special concern, including the cerulean warbler. Over 30 species of reptiles and amphibians have been observed on the property, and more than 575 different types of plants.
Dr. Angie Shelton of the Environmental Resources Advisory Council presented results of a survey conducted last spring. Shelton said the average number of flowering plants at Griffey Lake Nature Preserve is significantly lower than at neighboring Brown County State Park or Morgan Monroe State Forest, where deer are managed by controlled hunts. Shelton said the uncontrolled deer browsing at Griffey Lake is reducing the ability of plants to reproduce and is reducing the number of plant species as well. Shelton said the deer's impact is especially devastating on trees, and her survey indicates native trees including ash, hickory, beech, sassafras, and sugar maple are at risk of disappearing at Griffey Lake.
During that period these data were collected, no new tree seedlings grew into those plots except where the deer were excluded. And so the future of the forest is the tree seedlings, the next generation. And what we're seeing, it seems, at Griffey right now is that next generation of trees is being excluded. And so unless we do something to manage those deer, we may be losing a generation of trees, which is not going to bode well for the future of the forest.
Shelton said heavy grazing by deer is clearing the way for invasive plants such as honeysuckle, multiflora, rose, and barberry. The city tried culling the deer in 2014 with no success. Sharpshooters provided by White Buffalo Incorporated were meant to remove up to 100 deer. The cull was ultimately called off because deer were eating acorns, which were unusually plentiful that year instead of eating hunter's bait. Panelists pointed to the success of managed deer hunts at neighboring Morgan Monroe State Forest and Brown County State Park. And during public comment, Environmental Commission member Ramsey Harik praised the scientific approach taken by the panelists, but asked Cotter whether another failed cull could be avoided.
What did we learn from the failure of the cull 2 years ago? It looks like it will be a heavy mast year, at least from what I can tell from the beach. And if it is a heavy mass deer and we try to do a cull again, what happens? How can the cull be proceeded with more effectively without the great expenditure of a failed cull?
I don't know that there is a good answer to that. I think if the acorns are there this winter, that we'll probably face that same challenge. I think we learned that the acorns can interfere with the sharpshooting effort the first time, but I don't know that there's anything we can do to predict or prepare for that that would allow us to be more successful the second time around. What I can say is that we will continue to monitor the vegetation and collect data, and we'll move forward from there.
By contrast, Mike Enyart, who lives in the woods near Griffey Lake, said the previous cull failed not because of an abundance of acorns, but because there weren't any deer there. Enyart pressed for a deer count, saying the same company that attempted the previous cull could also survey the deer. Enyart also maintained some Monroe County residents hunt deer in the Lake Griffey area for food.
But I'm opposed to bringing out-of-state carpet-bagging snipers into this community to do a job that the hunters are willing to do.
Natural Resources Manager Steve Cotter is expected to recommend the city attempt another cull as a first step in managing white-tailed deer at Griffey Lake. Cotter will make his recommendations to the Board of Park Commissioners during their August 22nd meeting.
With a new school year on the horizon and international students from all over the world pouring onto IU's Bloomington campus, scammers are on the lookout to trick naive international students into turning over money and personal information. Rusty Warlick, a special agent with the FBI, handles cases of fraud in the Bloomington area. Warlick said scammers target victims by claiming to represent law enforcement officials or collections agents.
What we're seeing is that students are receiving calls on their cell phones from various different numbers, but a lot of students are reporting that they are receiving calls from our office here in Bloomington, indicating that the call is coming from the FBI. They don't always identify themselves as such, but part of the situation is they are indicating that they're under investigation or they have an outstanding warrant in some cases and that they need to go purchase Amazon gift cards, iTunes gift cards, or something like that in order for us not to go arrest them. Or it may be a sheriff's department outstanding warrant that they get told about. In order to stop them from coming out and getting arrested, they have to go out and get these cards. And the students are reading the numbers off the back of the cards to the perpetrator that's calling them without contacting the FBI or contacting the sheriff's department.
Warlick said incoming international students are easy prey for fraudsters, as they are often unaware of the purposes of agencies like the IRS or the FBI.
A lot of times the foreign students sometimes fall victim to this because they don't know what the FBI does specifically and the procedures that we have in place. So when someone calls and represents themselves as the FBI or a government agency and asks them to read the numbers off the cards, they trust that the person that they're talking to is in fact who they claim to be, which in fact on many frauds is not the case. And we see that frequently on elderly frauds with lottery scams, sweepstakes scams, romance scams. People want to believe the person on the phone.
Warlick said it's difficult to convict fraudsters due to the lack of cooperation from foreign countries and their respective law enforcement officials.
The problem with any type of international scams or frauds is that in order to obtain information to secure any type of conviction or even identify who in fact is doing this, we have to have foreign countries' cooperation and foreign law enforcement cooperation. Unfortunately, a lot of the players that do these types of scams either refuse to cooperate with the U.S. government and to pursue these individuals, or they don't do it in a timely manner, and these types of scams continue over the years. Part So working with the U.S. Attorney's Office to identify those scams that we think we can actually identify someone and eventually prosecute are the ones that we try to identify.
Warlick said local law enforcement officials, or the FBI, are encouraging international students to help collecting evidence against the fraudsters.
I would say if, in fact, you are contacted by someone and you believe you're defrauded, contact law enforcement, whether it's the sheriff's department, police department, the FBI, just so there is a record of these types of crimes. The sheriff's department and the police department, as well as us, will, in most of the cases, indicate that there's nothing we really can do about this outside of getting awareness, but to have that information documented could lead to something in the future or potentially help an existing case with additional current activity that's going on. So if you get defrauded, report it to a law enforcement agency.
The FBI and the IRS will never ask you for money over the phone. If you believe you may have been scammed, contact local law enforcement.
An Associated Press report last week stated that Indiana University had more than 50 cases of alleged sexual misconduct by their employees across all campuses last year. The report stated that these cases were described as sexual assault, sexual harassment, or gender discrimination, incidents of domestic violence, as well as incidents of stalking. Emily Springston, the university's chief student welfare and Title IX officer, reportedly told the AP that she's not alarmed by the number of reports, as there are more than 19,000 employees across all IU campuses. Investigations into alleged misconduct cases are generally conducted by the university's Title IX coordinator, deputy Title IX coordinator, or a student affairs official. WFHB reached out to multiple IU officials who declined to comment and instead referred to their sexual harassment policy webpage.
A change in how high school graduation rates are determined could negatively impact Indiana schools. The new Every Student Succeeds Act will require schools to determine their graduation rates based on the diploma that the majority of students receive. This means the Core 40 educational requirements, or anything higher, would be the only diplomas that count in Indiana. Recipients of the less rigorous general diploma will not be included in school graduation rates. Monroe County School Corporation spokesperson Andrew Clampett says he doesn't think the move is fair to students or schools.
Our hope is that there'll be one Indiana diploma, and then there will be different specialized emphasis on what type of diploma that would be. So whether it would be a, you know, an honors or a Core 40 in some capacity. It's our hope that the state board will retitle all the diplomas under one name, for example, the Indiana diploma. And then under that, there would be general academic honors, technical honors, or any other category that may be added.
When the graduation rate of a school decreases, then it may negatively impact its state-issued A through F grades. These grades play a major role in teacher performance grants, how present the state government is in a school, and its overall public perception. Last year, 42% of Brown County High School graduates received a general diploma, according to the Herald Times. Not counting these diplomas would cause Brown County High School's grade to plummet. Clampett said he hopes the state makes adjustments to ease out the problem. He says MCCSC has not yet heard back from the state on implementing any changes. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Chris Abert is the director of Indiana Recovery Alliance. The nonprofit works in Monroe County to provide clean needles and what Abert calls harm reduction to the areas addicted and homeless.
I'm here with Chris Abert with the Indiana Recovery Alliance. And could you tell me a little bit about Ian Stark and kind of the beginning of what is now the Indiana Recovery Alliance?
Sure. So, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago, a young man named Ian Stark was found deceased in a stairwell. He had died from exposure. And a few friends and I thought that that was tragic, right, to say the least. And rather than just complain about it, we wanted to start to form relationships with people more that were on the streets. So we started doing outreach. We got bikes, bike trailers, blankets, coats, things like that, first aid supplies, camping supplies, and just started hitting the streets, giving out those supplies.
Where did you get that? Those supplies, the blankets and everything?
Well, people's garages, people's closets.
Just spare ones that you had laying around?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so what does that look like now? So that was a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So now what does the IRA look like now?
So out of that, we started hearing from people that they needed clean injection supplies, that they needed a myriad of other things, that there are huge gaps in services. So we started exploring different ways to deliver those goods. In the midst of all that, there was a largest HIV outbreak in the history of the country, about an hour south of us in Scott County. Approximately 5% of a town down there lives with HIV now, primarily from IV drug use. So that changed the laws in the state pretty quickly in a reactionary way to be able to deliver these preventative services. So we jumped on board that. A few of us moved away from the other project and incorporated a nonprofit to be able to start to do full harm reduction, but still do exactly what we were doing before. So we still have bikes, we still have trailers, we still have, you know, these really close personal relationships with people who are experiencing homelessness and poverty.
And how many members have you grown to?
Members, as far as volunteers, we have approximately 10 to 15 that put in time every week, hundreds more that do community syringe pickup, going around trying to find syringes if they've been improperly disposed of. And as far as participants, we're about 1,600 participants for the region. Primarily, the vast majority of those are Monroe County.
So is that also Bedford and Ellettsville, or is it primarily focused in Bloomington, or do you get into the rural community at all, I guess?
Sure. So we don't do direct outreach in the rural community. It's difficult to figure out where exactly you would go. But definitely people come in from rural areas. We do outreach in Bedford once a week. We do outreach at Shalom twice a week. We have office hours, and then, of course, we have our bike outreach.
And can you talk a little bit, one of the biggest things it sounds like that you do is harm reduction. And what does that mean, harm reduction?
I think the easiest way to say it is that harm reduction is just looking realistically at the world and saying there are certain things that have always existed and that will always exist. For example, people have had difficulties with alcohol since we first started squishing grapes. So the idea then isn't to necessarily, you know, we want to curtail people living in chaotic drug use, right? We want to help them no longer live in chaotic drug use, but we also want to keep people alive. And one of the things that we've discovered is that if you collaborate with people by meeting them exactly where they are, and you ask them honestly what positive change looks like for them, that they'll tell you if you have a good relationship with them. So we try to find out what that looks like. So does that mean positive change is using clean syringes as opposed to sharing syringes? Does it mean positive change means moving away from a drug that's causing a lot of difficulties in your life to a drug that isn't causing as many difficulties? Does positive change mean abstinence, long-term abstinence? Does positive change? So it's all these things. So the short of it is that harm reduction is any positive change. And we know that the cumulative effects of these small positive changes within the population lead to tangible and large effects in our community. as a whole. So this is good for the individual. It's good for the community. I think what I like about it most, too, is it connects people, despite the fact that they are continuing to engage in activities that tends to have them pushed to the margins of society so we can keep people connected. So what we want to do is we want to build honest relationships where people can actually tell us what they're experiencing in their lives. A good parallel is domestic violence, right? So oftentimes people will just continue to tell someone who is in a situation of domestic violence, you have to leave, you can't be there. Well, there are myriad reasons why a person can't leave. So then to just calm down on the prescriptive you have to, and open up a conversation about, okay, so you're in this difficult situation. What can we do now to keep you as safe as possible? And it takes a long time of, treating somebody with respect and dignity to be able to have those type of honest conversations where they feel comfortable enough to be vulnerable about what's really going on in their lives. And I don't think you can be helpful to really collaborative with a person at all if you have no idea what's actually going on in their lives, right?
So it's not like a holistic prescriptive approach. It's very much dependent on their willingness to engage.
It's absolutely driven by their willingness to engage. One of the nice things about it is I've been a social worker for 14 years, and this is the only non-coercive, truly collaborative work I've ever done. So there's nothing over anybody's head. Nobody's going to lose their kids. Nobody's going to go to jail or have their probation revoked. It really is 100% participant driven.
Does that get frustrating sometimes when you see somebody who had been making progress either backslide or change their goals or not want to work?
Honestly, when somebody, quote unquote, backslides, because I don't know, but when somebody has a setback from a goal that they had set for themselves and comes in, it's actually says everything. It says that we've done our job building good relationships where people feel comfortable enough to come in those circumstances. Because typically there's a lot of shame and guilt. So if we can build relationships where people show back up, they get a much different reaction from us because we're really happy to see them in that exact situation. Does that make sense? I would rather have a honest relationship with them where we could meet each other exactly where we were so that they didn't have to feel like they couldn't come in because they didn't meet my goal, right? So we're really clear with people that if they come in, whatever the goal is, that's their goal. And if their goal changes, we want to see them just as much as if they meet the goal as presently stated.
More of Abert's interview is available online at WFHB.org.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Hackers, fraudsters, and thieves are finding whole new ways to attack you these days, and they're more dangerous than ever because they can hit you in places you simply don't expect. If you're connected to the internet, and who isn't these days, they can get into your appliances, your robots, and even your video games. Take the Devil's Ivy, for instance. That's a security bug recently found by internet security firm Senrio in some software which has been used by dozens of major companies who make various gadgets that are connected online, especially security products. It was found in a security camera, like those you may use to watch your home or monitor or a baby, and Sanrio's researchers quickly determined it affected every camera made by that company and was probably included in thousands of other products. Internet-connected thermostats, refrigerators, and voice-activated command systems like Apple's Siri or Amazon's Alexa are showing up everywhere, and this so-called Internet of Things is far more vulnerable than most people realize. If you have anything that goes online, from computers and smartphones to household appliances or security apparatus, you need to do two things. First, protect it with a password, your own password. Never leave the manufacturer's default password in place. And second, keep its software updated. When dangers are found, manufacturers quickly issue patches for their programs, but they don't do any good unless you make sure they get installed. Check for new updates regularly and often. If you play video games from a company called Valve, your computer can be attacked if your avatar dies. No joke. 1UP Security blew the whistle on this one. If your character gets killed, zap, your computer gets infected with a Trojan virus. Valve has issued a patch, but if you play Counter-Strike, Global Offensive, Team Fortress 2, Half-Life Deathmatch, Portal 2, or Left 4 Dead 2, you'd better scan your computer right away and get the Valve company's patch downloaded and installed. And more people have robots these days. One of the most popular is Roomba, a little round vacuum cleaner. In order to get around, avoid falling downstairs, and find its charging station, a Roomba needs to learn the floor plan of your home. Now, Reuters News Service reports that the makers of Roomba, iRobot, are planning to download that floor plan from your vacuum cleaner's memory and sell it. iRobot's president, Colin Angle, said, quote, "There's an entire ecosystem of things and services that the smart home can deliver once you have a rich map of the home," end quote. Let's face it, the Internet of Things is so new that it's still a long way from being safe. Connectivity can be very convenient, but it's up to you to see that it doesn't become catastrophic. A smart home may not be so smart yet. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at wfhb.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@wfhb.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Cole Stinson and Arjun Balasundaram, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
Our engineer today is Dan Withard. Our theme music provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported independent daily news program, recognized among the best newscasts in 2016 by the Indiana chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. And stay tuned for Standing Room Only, our award-winning weekly lecture series coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.